Musings Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Hello and welcome to the Market Musings Podcast, where we're very pleased to welcome back for a second time Adam Davidson, who is the CEO of Trident Royalties. So, hi Adam, how are you? It's been, we were just talking, I think it's been September, August since we did the first podcast. Everything good with you?
Yeah, no, very good.
Good, excellent. Of course, we have Kenny as well joining us.
Adam, yep, it's good to speak again. Yeah, I was just saying before we started recording, it's, you know, the months just slipped by. I don't know if the COVID situation has just accelerated time, but I can't believe it was last August or September. But anyway, it's good to have you back on again. And who is it you're calling from today?
I'm in Denver, Colorado.
All right, excellent. What was that, about 7 hours behind us?
Yeah, six, seven.
And is it opening up in the States, the COVID restrictions, or what's the kind of situation over there?
Yeah, it's very state by state. It's getting a little bit easier here. I've been able to get the vaccine, and it was pretty easy. Just drive up and sign up online and drive up and don't even have to get out of your car. And plenty of sites to get it. So it seems like it's sort of slowly getting there. Now that we're getting into springtime, maybe we'll start to see things shift a little bit back towards normal.
Yeah. There is definitely normality coming back. In fact, I don't think we've actually had a COVID death in Scotland for 8 days now. So it's definitely a massive improvement. But it's great to have you back on. And I know last time we sort of dug into your past and you told us, you know, all about your career. But I think just for benefit of listeners that maybe didn't, you know, listen to that podcast, maybe just for 5 minutes, you could give us a brief sort of spotted history of what you've done in your career so far.
Yeah, sure. Well, I've been with Trident now for about a year and a half or over that now. But prior to that, I was with a mining private equity fund. In fact, most of the people involved in Trident, it's a small team. It's just four of us, but everybody effectively has private equity backgrounds, either working directly for PE funds in the mining space, or in the case of our CFO, working for a PE-backed miner. And then prior to that, that really got me into the mining and investment space. And I worked both here and down in an office in Perth. Did deals on every continent, obviously not Antarctica, but pretty much every continent. And across all the various commodities. So it was really good learning experience. And then prior to that, I was with BMO Capital Markets, the Canadian bank, on the metals and mining equity research side, specifically in coal and steel. And prior to that was with Orica Mining. And I think my background's pretty consistent with most of the team in that we all sort of have technical backgrounds on the mining side. And then as our careers evolved, moved into the mining finance side of the world and have been there for some time before we then jumped into Trident.
Yeah, so you've got a broad suite of skill sets, not only with yourself, but across the team. So it sounds like you guys are well positioned. Obviously, we're nearly halfway through 2021. I mean, could you maybe in sort of 5 minutes just summarize the achievements that Trident for 2021?
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, the first quarter is probably, but as a bit of background, as you guys know, we just IPO'd onto AIM in June last year. So, you know, fairly young company. We did about a 20 million US equity raise when we listed. And we started with sort of just one mining royalty, paying iron ore royalty on an asset down in Australia. And so since then, we've now grown to 12 royalties. And I'd say Q1 then this year was probably our most sort of momentous period outside of that initial listing. We did what's our largest transaction to date, largest by far, was a $28 million acquisition of a lithium royalty on a project located here in the U.S., and in conjunction with that, we did a 29 million, a circa 29 million US equity raise. So that obviously I can go into the actual asset acquisition we did in a bit more detail in a moment, but just fundamentally that really changed Trident, and it boosted our liquidity. You know, people are able to sort of get in and out of the stock. There's ample sort of liquidity in the market, and it put us on the map in a big way, because that's why we love all of our royalties that we've acquired to date. That is sort of the truly tier one global significant asset that we have a royalty over. So it was a real step change for us.
Mm. It seems like Trident have certainly blazed the trail just in the last year since coming to market, in a sector that really is not as well known in London as it is in North America. I wonder if we maybe just to reiterate the royalties model. Can you just tell us what it's all about, Adam, and why it is so popular in North America?
Yeah, sure. I think, royalties, most people are probably pretty familiar with them from the music or movie space. You'll hear about, you know, somebody retaining a royalty, and mining royalties aren't really any different. It's it entitles the royalty holder to a percentage of revenue of the underlying asset. And so obviously for music, as the song is played, the royalty holder gets a percentage of sales. And for a mining asset, as the mine produces and generates revenue, you get a percentage of that revenue. So the reason, I suppose, it's such a popular business model in North America, and then there's quite a few royalty companies, I think 20 odd listed on the Toronto Exchange, and sort of collective market cap of around 60 billion. So it's a big, pretty significant part of the mining finance landscape. But the reason it is so popular is because you are getting that top line exposure. So, you know, in the profit loss statement, royalties are exposed to just the very top line, the revenue position, whereas investing in mining equities exposes you to the bottom line, the profit line effectively. So whereas equities are exposed to everything in between, all the operating costs and capital costs, royalties don't sort of have that same risk exposure. That said, royalties still get the upside of that equities enjoy. So, I mean, people invest in mining equities and take on that sort of risk exposure because, you know, the underlying commodity can boom, or the mine can perform exceptionally well and expand production, or they find more ore and extend the life. I mean, that all benefits the revenue line as well, effectively. So the royalty still gets all that same sort of upside exposure, but doesn't get exposed to operating costs. So the best example is when the commodity price goes down, for example, it may go down 10%, but that compresses your profit margin down 50%. And that really hurts equity. Whereas, you know, we don't want to see prices go down, but if it went down 10%, well, the royalty would go down 10% rather than 50% of equity. So you get this sort of same upside coupled with a sort of downside protection, and then combine that into a portfolio of many different royalties that gives you this diversification versus a miner that may have one or two operations. You take that in totality, and unsurprisingly, royalty companies tend to then trade at higher multiples than miners for all those sort of intrinsic reasons.
Yep. And could I touch on the lithium project from earlier in the year, Adam? And I mean, it's quite a coup for the company, because when you actually do a bit of digging into it, so it's actually the largest lithium reserve in the USA.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, it is, as I said, it's a significant global asset. I mean, when you look at just taking sort of the US as a microcosm of the broader sort of lithium market and EV and rechargeable battery thematic, I think the U.S. is sort of forecasted to increase to about 100,000 tons a year of lithium demand to support, you know, the development effectively of rechargeable batteries. And at the moment, we produce less than 5,000 tons a year. So effectively, our lithium comes from hard rock mines in Australia that gets processed in Korea and then sent across to the U.S. So the project that we have a royalty over, it received its final sort of key federal permit in January. And then off the back of that, did a $400 million equity raise, largely to fund construction of the project. And they didn't sell us a royalty. They're obviously well-funded. This was an existing royalty that was owned by a third party that had it for nearly a decade and needed to sell. So as soon as the operator of the asset got its permit and got that funding, we turned around and and approached them and said, we're very much interested in trying to acquire that royalty now because we knew of its existence. But yeah, so we acquired the royalty and it effectively entitles us to 60% of the royalty, which is a 1.75% royalty. So it's a pretty significant royalty over a very significant large asset that's now got that sort of clear certainty to first production. And that's kind of one of the biggest concerns you have when you're buying a royalty. If it's not a currently producing mine, or do you have certainty that it's going to get financed and permitted such that it will become a mine someday? And so we've got that comfort in this case. And to put it in sort of big headline numbers, we paid $28 million. And based on the most recent technical study of the mine, we see it paying back sort of about $340 million, circa $340 million to us based on that the parameters in that most recent study over its 46-year mine life. And then as you do with royalties, they can expand production, they can extend the mine life. So we see this as giving us, you know, at the very minimum, nearly half a century's worth of exposure to a key, we'd say the key battery metal, and then all the sort of upside that conveys with being exposed to that that sort of once in a generation shift in energy, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. And in the EV commodities race, it's almost like lithium was kind of forgot about. It's only really in the last 7 or 8 months that all of a sudden the whole world's scouring for lithium projects again. I don't know why it was left behind, because it was all copper, you know, nickel, cobalt, rare earths, and there was never any mention of lithium. But now it's everybody's looking for it.
No, that's right. I mean, and the price has doubled just this year. I mean, from January to May, the lithium price has doubled. And we the operator of the asset got their permit in January 15th, and then raised that money on the 19th. So we were negotiating this deal sort of early in that process. But yeah, I mean, it's sort of classic for the mining sector. You know, there's underinvestment when a commodity is not hot, and then suddenly demand sort of starts to turn back on, but mines don't get discovered and developed that quickly. You know, the Thacker Pass that we have our royalty over, it took 10 years for it to go through its permitting process. So you get this natural supply and demand in the mining sector never balance, and that therein lies the opportunity for investors. You don't want to invest at the peak of the cycle. You want to get exposure to good commodities and good assets and at the right price, most critically. So we secured this deal, and on our numbers, we see it as sort of a mid to upper teens post-tax IRR. So to get that kind of annual return for year after year for 46-year mine life, plus all the potential upside that conveys with, you know, if they expand the project or they discover more ore, because the royalty covers the whole project and a 2 kilometer area of interest around it. Those kind of return metrics are really what we're shooting for.
Yeah, it's definitely the cornerstone of the company. So as it cements your place in the royalties sector. So I think, would you say we are at the start of a super cycle at the moment, Adam?
Yeah, you know, it's always hard to say, because you can, I'm sure, find an economist that will say we are, and then others that say we aren't. I suppose for us, I'm certainly bullish on the commodity sector. I mean, I think one thing that is indisputable is that it moves hand in hand with inflationary concerns, or moves inversely, I should say. So, you know, as inflation starts to uptick, you'll see an uptick in commodity prices, and we've already seen that. I mean, yeah. A couple of our other royalties, we bought our paying iron ore royalty when iron ore was at $85 a ton, and just this week it touched at $190. And similar, our first copper royalty, we acquired that when copper was at $5,800 a ton, and it just recently crossed $10,000. So I think that all bodes well for mining commodities. And from an investor viewpoint, I suppose the key thing is you want to have exposure to real assets in your portfolio as a hedge against inflation, whether you believe in the sort of size or scale and the impact that it may have. I think indisputably you should have that exposure to hedge yourself, because it's just the right way to have a balanced portfolio.
Yeah. And I mean, after, it's it's different this time, I think, because obviously we've got this, I'm not going to call it a black swan event, but it almost is, you know, the EV revolution and, you know, this race for green energy and the electrification of everything in the world. I mean, that just seems to be a curveball that's been thrown into it as well. And I actually think the EV revolution is bigger than the super cycle. I don't really think people have grasped yet. I mean, there's a lot of people, maybe it's older people that are electric cars never catch on, but it's coming. I mean, all the manufacturers have already said, you know, the auto manufacturers, we're stopping making internal combustion engines in 2025. You know, they've already drawn a line in the sand. So there is, for want of a better, you know, there's a storm coming down the line, but I think a lot of people have not accepted it yet.
No, that's right. I mean, when I say the U.S. isn't forecast to need 100,000 tons of lithium, I mean, that's not sort of a 10-year forecast. They're talking about in the next couple of years, that's what the annual demand is going to be. So, I mean, it's moving quickly. In fact, yesterday I saw a chart that showed the price of an average EV vehicle over just the last few years. And you know, as you'd expect, that cost is halved, you know, so it's getting more and more accessible as the uptake in EVs is eventuating. I'd agree with you. I think super cycles tend to, you know, they pop for, you know, 4 or 5 years and then they drop back off and then, you know, that's the way the cycles go. And it tends to be because that supply demand is sort of always decoupled. You know, you get overinvestment in boom cycles and underinvestment in quiet cycles. And so the two never sort of line up, but this EV revolution is something different. You know, I sort of said it's a once in a generation thing, which almost sounds a little glib, but I think it is true. I mean, when my kids are driving, they're going to be driving EVs. I think that no one would sort of deny that. And what it does to the mining sector and then certain metals in particular is it's really revolutionary. I mean, lithium had some, you know, industrial purposes prior to this, but you know, by the end of this decade, it's going to be almost entirely allocated towards EVs. And so to see a metal that was, you know, formerly sort of very, very much a secondary metal, you know, and had a few sort of industrial purposes and was not on anybody's radar, but now it's sort of front and center and there's a scramble to try to find adequate supply and, you know, for battery manufacturers to want to secure that supply. And they've got, you know, 10, 20 year plans. So they don't want a mine that's going to sort of pop up and disappear, you know, be exhausted in a few years. They need it in a good jurisdiction that's stable. And so there's all these sort of big considerations that when they're impacting what was formerly a minor metal, I mean, it's just revolutionary for that metal. So it's, and that's what we're seeing in some of these mining commodities and even the more established ones like nickel and copper. I mean, copper, for example, we've got a paying copper royalty package of royalties over a big development copper project or advancing copper project. And it's, copper's obviously got a number of uses and it's, you know, got a big, much more established market. That said, you know, it's the most efficient means of conveying electrical current outside of silver. And you know, so it's going to benefit from the electrification, which is why you see these calls for, you know, I think Bank of America, so they see it hitting has the potential to hit $20,000 a ton, you know, and it's sort of sitting at just below 10 right now. I mean, so it's had a great run, but I don't think we're capped in any way in that regard because this uptake is only getting started.
Yeah, definitely. And when you think of the list of metals that are, you know, are getting used in this EV revolution, I mean, obviously you guys have covered lithium and copper, but as you mentioned, silver there as well. I mean, I think that's more in the solar side of things, but there's also manganese. But I suppose iron ore could be, you've got iron ore as well in the portfolio, so that could come into the revolution as well. And obviously there's rare earths, graphite as well. Is there any plans to maybe look at, for instance, some graphite or rare earths to complement the EV side of things?
No, there certainly is. I mean, we obviously, you know, as you know, our strategy is to build a portfolio that's representative of the mining sector. And you know, so we want exposure. We have exposure to precious metals, to base metals, to battery metals. We want almost an index fund like exposure. So when the cycle turns, you can say, yes, royalties are the best way to get my exposure and tried and see only the only share that I can buy that gives me exposure in a broad sort of diversified way. So battery metals are definitely part of that. You know, as I mentioned, we've got copper exposure. We'd like to add nickel, and I think more copper as well. And some of these other sort of more minor but battery metal specific commodities, I think we'd like to see getting into the mix as well. But the key from our perspective is just making sure it's the right asset, because that's where the nuance lies. Is ensuring that it's the quality and you know, in a position to sort of fit into that value chain the way you expect. Because you can invest in, say, a graphite project, but it's not the right flake size or it can't be refined properly. And so it's therein that you sort of, well, we rely on our sort of mining investment backgrounds and have been doing this for a while to evaluate the projects and find ones that sort of give us what we're actually looking for. And lithium is a good example. I mean, sort of looking a little more macro, you look at all the various battery chemistries, because there's, you know, there's quite a few designs and it's evolving, and they're going to get more efficient and lighter and everything else. And they want to reduce the cost as well. So it's, you know, looking at how we see those evolving, and lithium we like, because it did until recently fly a little bit under the radar, but you know, it's about 10% both of the weight of the batteries as well as the cost of the batteries. And that's a consistent number across almost every single battery design. Whereas, you know, some are manganese heavy, some are cobalt heavy, or some have no cobalt, some are nickel heavy. So you get these sort of competing designs, but one consistent piece of it is lithium is in all of them, and in about the same quantities. So it's those considerations that we want to look through, and, you know, both on the supply and the demand side to ensure that we're getting the right kind of exposure.
Yeah, makes complete sense. Mark, I'm sorry, I've been talking too much. I better let you back in.
That's right. You get excited about
that. I know. He mentioned silver and I was getting all excited.
Yeah.
I like my silver.
Just how do you choose the spread of commodities, Adam? Just looking at the ones you've got. Am I right in saying you've got 8 projects? It looks like 4 of them there are gold. So that's sort of 50% are in gold. Is that any specific reason?
No, I'd say, I mean, when we listed, we just had that one royalty, and the iron ore royalty, and now we've done 7 deals and 12, but a total of 12 royalties since listing last June. You know, and I suppose the way we view it is we're still growing and trying to diversify, so we're not trying to get too cute on sort of saying we've got enough gold, we're not going to look at gold anymore. Okay. You know, we're just looking at the most accretive deals, and as we build size and scale, that may come more into focus, but we're not letting it dominate our thinking at the moment.
Okay. And then of course you've got the different stages as well, haven't you? You've got exploration, you know, so that's like almost grassroots, and you've got advanced, and you've got production. Again, is there a mix that you, or sort of ratio that you go for there?
Yeah, it's not a fixed ratio. I mean, I think, yeah, obviously everybody wants cash flow, you know, we you know, we generate enough revenue, we would cover our costs, all that good stuff. But I suppose, well, naturally paying royalties costs more, because, you know, the seller of the royalty can put a very finite price on that, and it's you know, you're taking less risk, so you pay more for it. So it's getting the right balance to ensure that we're hitting our return targets, because we want a portfolio that's plus 15% post-tax IRR. So yeah, it does take a mix of development stage and production assets and some exposure to exploration assets, you know, the earlier grassroots stuff, but only in a way that's, you know, projects that we can see as sort of coming online as tier one global style projects. You know, there's hundreds of royalties you can go out there and buy or write. So we don't want a big portfolio of exploration stage stuff that's not going anywhere. So it's sort of targeting the right mix. Thacker Pass, the lithium project, I keep coming back to, is sort of a prime example, because we got the sort of return metric that we were looking for. But you got a project, yes, it's not producing today, but it's permitted and funded. So, I mean, it's you've got sort of that comfort and certainty. And then there will be hiccups as it ramps up. There always is. But with the 46-year mine life, and again, the benefit of a royalty is they can have hiccups. You don't get diluted. You know, you just sit there and wait patiently. Whereas, you know, if a miner is ramping up a project, they run into headwinds, they got to go raise more money, you know, and they dilute their shareholders.
Yeah.
Those are all sort of problems for equity to worry about. If they have to go raise more money, you sort of applaud that as a royalty holder because they're great. You know, the project's got more funding at its disposal. But, you know, it's projects like that in terms of where they're at in the development stage where we just find that there's a lot of value, but you still have that sort of comfort that come 2024, that thing's going to be paying and it'll be paying for the next half century.
Yeah, significant next half century. Yeah. And am I right in saying as well that once the royalty is agreement is in place, you almost got it for life, regardless of funding requirements or what have you that may come from the issuer in the first place, the mine in the first place?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they once they're there effectively in perpetuity. And in fact, in most jurisdictions, the royalties are tied to the license or the claim. Yeah. So the operator could go bankrupt even, but the royalty stays on that property. And if somebody else picks it up, the royalty's still there, whereas equity would obviously get wiped out. So, I mean, that's one of the key benefits. And it depends on jurisdiction and the sort of various legal frameworks. But that's one of the key things.
Yeah, so it's almost a no-brainer for someone who wants exposure to the mining and commodities space, but, well, a massively reduced sort of risk level.
No, that's right. Yeah, and that's really why it's such an exciting sort of financial instrument. I mean, that's why we've frankly jumped out of, you know, nice jobs and jumped into a startup royalty company. Royalties is a financial instrument. I mean, it's hard to beat them. They give you all the upside, as I said. So the mine extends its life or it expands the production profile, all the stuff that people invest in equities for. The royalty still benefits from that, but then you're getting all that sort of downside protection that we talked about. So it is sort of the perfect financial instrument, particularly as you get a diversified portfolio of them. It's hard to beat that.
Yeah. So go on, Kenny.
Yeah, I was just going to say as well, I suppose the beauty of a royalties company as well is that the actual footprint of the company doesn't need to be large. Because obviously you guys are not doing the exploration or the drilling. You know, you don't have this massive sort of overheads to manage. So I imagine it's quite a lean machine.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I mentioned we've got four full-time employees and no sort of plans to expand. Yeah, as we start using outside counsel too much, then we might bring somebody in-house. That would be the sort of expansion we'd see down the track, but no immediate plans for that. I mean, as you say, you're not operating the mines. You don't need a cast of thousands. In fact, I like to reference Royal Gold, one of our peers that's located here in Denver. You know, they're a circa $7 billion market cap royalty company focusing purely on the precious side of things. But I think their latest presentation flags, they've got 27 employees across a few offices for that size market cap. You know, if you were a miner, you'd have thousands of employees for a $7 billion company. Yeah. So it's just a very, very scalable business.
Yeah, that's a definite advantage, and it's probably something people would overlook when they're looking to invest in a royalties company. They don't appreciate it. It's a very small footprint. So it definitely makes investing sense. Mm. Mark, sorry, I'll over.
No. All I was going to say, Adam, was what can the market expect some more than Adam? What's the roadmap looking like?
Well, yeah, I think we've been moving. It must be, if not the one of the sort of fastest paces of royalty peers. And I mean, part of it's down to, you know, the reason we did jump into this, because I did mention there's sort of 20 odd, you know, TSX listed royalty companies. So people may be wondering why, you know, what are you doing different, or why this obviously isn't an unfound opportunity. So, you know, why jump into it? And really the nexus for us was that all of our peers, by and large, are focused purely on precious metals and have a heavy weighting towards the Americas. And, you know, they're all listed in Canada. They want gold royalties in Nevada. You know, that's sort of the number one target. You know, so, you know, we got a lithium royalty in Nevada, but, you know, not many of them are targeting lithium. So you sort of, in fact, if you look at the easiest thing is to look at the market cap of the royalty sector and then look at the market cap or the global revenues of the mining sector. You know, the mining sector is about a third precious metals, a third base metals, and a third bulk commodities and battery metals and everything else. Whereas the mining royalty sector is 90%+ precious metals. You know, so it was born in precious metals and born to finance mines in North America, you know, 10, 20 years ago. That's kind of where the mining sector, the royalty sector evolved in the mining side. So it's not surprising that it's still sort of heavily weighted that way. So the opportunity we saw was to get more diversified exposure and then give that sort of index fund like exposure to commodities to investors. And so, yeah, we launched with that one royalty. We now have 12. We're moving pretty aggressively. Two are paying. A third is in construction. The Thacker Pass Lithium one, they flagged commencement of construction beginning of 2022. So, less than a year away. Before they start building the project. But for us, it's continuing to build on that momentum. We've seen we're getting the interest we wanted. We listed at 20p. We're now sort of bouncing around 34. As we build up the portfolio, that value is sort of being recognized. So it's really not sort of sitting on our laurels. We're just getting started. So it's continuing to build out the portfolio. And I think in the immediate term, I mentioned we did an equity raise in Q1 to fund the Thacker Pass acquisition. Now we're in the final stages of documenting a debt facility, because one of the benefits of a royalty model is obviously you get a diversified portfolio of assets. That's an easy sort of lendable thing for a bank or lender to provide leverage. If they got a diverse basket that provides them with security and cash flow to service the debt. So to grow this thing using debt so that we're not diluting our shareholders, of which I'm one, you want to grow this thing. Now we're at the stage where you can start to tap into the debt markets, and so you're expanding your debt facility to make transactions rather than going back to the equity markets. That's kind of the inflection point we're at the moment.
Cool. Great. Okay. Super. Well, Kenny, any final thoughts?
No, I don't want to start talking again, because I just go on and on. I just seem to get into a wee bubble and I forget your earmarks sometimes. But no, it's been great having you on again, Adam, and we should do this more often and not wait 7 or 8 months, because as you say, you guys are being aggressive with acquisitions.
Absolutely. We got too much going on to let it wait so long before we catch up, so we'll have to do it more frequently.
Mm. Great. Okay, well, thank you very much, Adam Davison from Trident Royalties. I think it's definitely a company that's worth a look for any investors to check out that royalty model. And as I say, as Kenny just said, you really have come in the year that you've come on, there's a heck of a lot happened. It's rapid progress. It doesn't sound like it's going to slow down anytime soon. So, yeah, thank you, Adam, for your time.
Yep, thanks, guys.
Yep, great to speak, and we'll catch up again soon.
Thank you for listening to another podcast from Market Musings with Fairbairn and Russell. Tune in next time.